The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! And so, it is time once again to get pumped up and to hurl some serious thunderbolts at some serious bad guys. Are you ready? Hoo-yah, yeah! Let's do it! This week, the Thunderbolt digs into the act of hoisting oneself by one's own petard. We explore the problem with white people. We contemplate incorrect correctness. We expose the TPP's private parts in public. And we expose a Democrat in sheep's clothing. Yes, kids, welcome to the Thunderbolt. Kicking the asses of evildoers since 2011. Often use the phrase hoisted by their own petards. So I decided to find out what the hell that even means, and I could not have been more pleased by the results of my investigation. It turns out that the word petard comes from the Middle French péter, which means to break wind, or the expulsion of intestinal gas. However, during the Middle Ages, the name petard came to be attached to a small bomb that was used for blowing up gates and walls whilst breaching fortifications. Petardiers were deployed during the sieges of castles or fortified cities. The petard was a rather primitive and an exceedingly dangerous explosive device, which comprised a brass or iron bell-shaped device that was filled with gunpowder and affixed to a wooden base called an amadrir. This was then attached to a wall or gate using hooks and rings. The fuse was lit, and if successful, the resulting explosive force, concentrated at the target point, would blow a hole in the obstruction, allowing assault troops to enter. However, if a petard detonated prematurely, the petardiere would be blown upward by the explosion. Thus, the petardiere was literally hoisted by his own petard. Perfect. I can definitely think of a few people whose intestinal gas I would love to see prematurely detonate. Such as Donald Trump. And there's never a dull minute with this guy. So Donald Trump has just advocated for banning all Muslim immigrants or refugees from the United States. That's not all. This dude is like bread and circus on steroids. The same idiot that advocates for a policy that is so off the charts outrageous on so many levels and is so profoundly wrong in so many ways. The same man is also the front runner for the Republican nomination for president. Donald Trump is a walking punchline to a very bad joke, but there he is. The only reason I can think of as to how he could possibly be there is because Donald Trump is effectively personifying America's right wing. He is supported by roughly 25% of Republican voters, which means around 6% of all registered voters, which is hardly a landslide. And Donald Trump basically represents the dying dinosaurs that are bitterly complaining about all of these upstart mammals. It is almost like Donald Trump was custom typecast for the role of lighting up the ugly American with neon and throwing the very worst and most reprehensible attributes of our racist and imperialist culture right into everyone's faces. He is appealing to a certain portion of the Republican Party, but he's totally freaking everyone else out, including many other Republicans. As if the Republican Party needed any more help in their grand implosion. But as for myself, I fall on the floor and I'm laughing. I just listened to Barry Swiker trash prominent leftists such as Amy Goodman and Noam Chomsky because they refused to touch 9/11 truth. Well, as far as 9/11 truth goes, it has been definitively proven that the Bush administration was warned numerous times by numerous credible sources that 9/11 was coming and that the Bush administration did absolutely nothing about it. It has also been definitively proven that the U.S. government conducted a massive cover-up of the facts after the fact, and that the 9/11 Commission report is actually less valuable than your toilet paper, because at least your toilet paper has a useful purpose. Now, there is no, quote, smoking gun definitively proving that 9/11 was actually a false flag attack orchestrated by Bush's people. But there is a lot of evidence indicating such. However, I do not trash Ms. Goodman and Mr. Chomsky et al. For not going there. For I understand that there are certain subjects that are absolutely taboo if you want to maintain any credibility of any kind whatsoever within the quote mainstream. And I think that we need voices within that mainstream, no matter how corrupt it is, simply because that is where the vast majority of Americans get their information about our world. And if you wish to work within that mainstream, then there are simply certain subjects that you are not allowed to touch. 9/11 truth, and pretty much all false flag attacks for that matter, fall under this category. The Kennedy assassination fell under this category for over 50 years. And though eventually it did become possible to broach that subject without destroying your career, there has still been no official mea culpa or none on the horizon concerning the Kennedy assassination. If Amy Goodman or Noam Chomsky were ever to broach the subject of what really happened on 9/11, they would immediately be viciously attacked, relegated to tinfoil hat category. They would be completely marginalized, and you would rarely, if ever, hear from them again. Fortunately, you have the Thunderbolt to fill in the gaps. Stated goal of the American intervention into Syria was to defeat ISIS. What that means is that defeating ISIS may or may not have actually been one of their strategic goals.
Life's never been easy. Not today, or any other. Times just keep on getting harder, sadder, and tougher.
But it is 99% guaranteed that they did have a lot of other, much darker strategic goals in mind as well. Most of which probably involved lots of guns and numerous bales of $100 bills.
So you've got a problem, a dirty job to do. Just look no further, I'm just the man for you.
Well, ISIS has been defeated. Yet the fighting rages on.
Way down south, by the river, is where you find him and the goods he'll deliver. No one knows where he's from or how long he's been a hired gun. You better heed my friendly warning, or you could be dead before the morning. You don't play unless you pay. So be ready to hear him say, give me more money, don't play no games. Give me more money, I'll throw you in the flame. Give me more money, don't tell me lies. Give me more money, or you will die.
And that's not all. The Pentagon has just announced that they are going to start stationing troops in Syria on a permanent basis.
You better run, you better hide. The bounty hunter is out tonight. There's a price.
This is an outrageous and exceedingly blatant violation of international law.
Is out tonight. There's a price.
But one of the many advantages,
well, I'm dead.
The bestowed upon the United States for being so exceptional is that we don't need to worry about laws. This immunity to law also more or less applies on only a slightly less extent to the European elites. And it for sure applies to Israel. Only dark-skinned people need worry on that front. And as for the Syrian people, they do have choices. Do they want plague? Or do they want cholera? Sophie, in fact, had a relatively easy choice compared to many that are currently being made by Syrian mothers. Within Syria these days, there are maybe 10 or 17 factions, most of whom are foreign, that are all fighting each other in various ever-shifting alliances. And virtually all of these forces are the bad guys. And all of them, except for some of the Kurdish factions, are a bunch of psychopathic child killers. And all of them, except some of the Kurdish factions, are mass murdering civilians for tactical or perhaps even strategic reasons. The only good guys in this fight are some, but not all, of the Kurdish factions and the Syrian civilians. And the Syrian civilians are the only faction on the ground right now that has absolutely no say whatsoever in what is happening to their own country. And in spite of what the American propaganda machine tells you, Bashar al-Assad actually remains quite popular amongst his own people. And this is in spite of the fact that Bashar al-Assad is himself one of the leading murderers of the Syrian people. Evidently, Assad still seems a better choice to the Syrian people than any of the other available options, in spite of that fact. Would you like plague? Or would you prefer cholera? Since tens of thousands of Syrian civilians have been killed, and since over 6 million of them have been displaced from their homes, and since 4 million of those displaced are now living in foreign refugee camps, and since in many of those cases they are being treated like criminals, then I am thinking that the people of Syria are probably not very well pleased with current events. Especially since the central cause of their woes, i.e. the United States of America, has just shut its own doors right into their desperate faces, adding even further shocking insults to already outrageous injury. And George W. Bush had to ask, why do they hate us? Ironically, while most Americans are completely ignorant of our own government's culpability in this state of affairs, the Syrian people know full well who has brought this catastrophe down upon their heads. I would be expecting some pretty serious blowback. This is the crime of capitalism. The only people who really should matter are the only people who don't matter. So this next segment was inspired by something I learned at the latest Media Island brunch with the Friends of Ugandan Safe Transport, which is a local organization that helps people with alternative sexual identities to escape from Uganda, where they are brutally and often fatally oppressed. But first, I want to set this up with the train of thought that was inspired by what I learned at the brunch. Just recently, I made a joke at the expense of some practitioners of a Middle Ages trade known as petardiers. Now, these were men who, during assaults upon fortified military positions, would place an incredibly dangerous explosive device known as a petard upon the gates or the walls of a fortress in an attempt to blow a hole in the fortifications. When the petard prematurely detonated, which evidently they were very wont to do, the petardier would be blown into the air, and thus the phrase "hoisted by his own petard" became popular, especially after Shakespeare utilized the phrase in Hamlet. Now, as part of the joke, I associated their trade with the fact that the word petard originally derived from an ancient Greek word for the expulsion of intestinal gas. So, the aforementioned train of thought proceeded thusly. I got to wondering if I could be guilty of dehumanizing petardiers with my joke. And since, unlike some people, I tend to try to answer uncomfortable questions that I ask of myself, this led me to the realization that the mere fact that the phrase "hoisted by their own petard" became so popular indicates that the dangers involved with practicing the art of the petardier were quite widely known. Meaning that unless they were performing the task under duress, as was surely the case in at least some cases, otherwise, this means that these petardiers could very likely have been very brave and selfless people who were willing to risk their all in order to advance a cause greater than their own. I'm also pretty sure that these admirable human beings would very likely fail to appreciate my joke had they ever had the opportunity to read it. Therefore, while I don't think I'll apologize to people many centuries dead, or to their descendants, even if their descendants are even aware of the fact that they have a hoisted petardiere in their woodpile, I do think that I will mitigate the dehumanizing factor a bit by explaining that petardieres were very likely very admirable and very brave human beings. Now, as for the Friends Ugandan Safe Transport, the thing I learned at the brunch was that their organization had originally been named the Friends Ugandan Underground Railroad. Now, I forget the details, which are largely irrelevant to the point I'm about to make anyway, but some organization objected to the Friends calling their organization the Underground Railroad. And so the Friends changed the name of their organization. Now, I didn't say anything at the time, but I thought that this was a bit too much, quote, correctness. The term Underground Railroad, Google it if you're not already familiar with it, has become a metaphor for helping people to escape persecution. One of the most honorable activities it is possible to engage in. And objecting to the Friends using the term to describe what they are doing carries the implication that there is something less than honorable about what the Friends are doing. The Friends are noted mostly for the desire for peace on Earth, so their instinctive reaction is to avoid friction with others, especially with their allies, and thus they change the name of their organization without much, if any, pushback. All I've got to say about that is they are lucky this decision was not left to me, because I'm pretty sure that I would not have backed down on that one quite so easily.
So it is now time for a quick station break. The Thunderbolt will return in just a moment. I feel that it is my civic duty to warn you that the Thunderbolt is about to strike this radio station. First, though, I would like to make plain that unless I have specific permission, I never presume to speak for anyone else, and I greatly appreciate it when everyone else returns the favor. The views expressed on this program are my views, and those views may or may not correspond with the views of the management of this radio station, their staff, their volunteers, their donors, and I can guarantee you that the views expressed on this program may not express the views of the administration at the Evergreen State College, though I do not know if any of this applies to their transdimensional doppelgangers. So I may need to consult an attorney on that one. But in the meantime, hang on to your seats, because here we go!
Yeah, I know the story. Other presidents' trade deals didn't live up to the hype. You feel cheated. You may never buy another trade deal again. But guess what? Your story just got a new ending. Hi, I'm B-Rock, with the best news in trade deals since the Dutch talked the Indians out of Manhattan Island. Now there's a place that offers trade deals you can live with. B-Rock's Giant Trade City. Oh, you may think you have to pay too much to get reduced tariffs in the end of preferential markets. You may think you have to even give up your good job. But at B-Rock's Giant Trade City, you pay less and get more. Look at this. The Trans-Pacific Partnership. Still being negotiated and still top secret. But what if I told you it contained rock-solid worker and environmental protections? What about suggested protections? Maybe even just a study of such protections? Well, it's all right in the deal, except for the first two. And if you own or run a company that's having problems with foreign regulators, this 21st century trade deal has got to make you smile. You get to take those job destroyers to a special tribunal that you help appoint. Sound impossible? That's what I thought until B-Rock's giant Trade City put our legendary leverage to work for you. Indians trying to cancel patents on vital medicines? Hey, we're Americans. We've got centuries of experience in knowing how to deal with Indians. And with TPP from B-Rock's giant Trade City, you've got Uncle Sam working for you again. But what if you're not doing business with Asia? Has Trade City got a plan for you? You better believe we do. How about this 2016 TTIP, giving you the very same package of goodies when you open up shop in Europe? Patent protection, copyright extensions, and of course, the traditional Trade City secrecy pledge. We don't break the seal until you're happy with the deal. And maybe not even then. So don't wait another minute, and for sure, don't even think about it. Just get down to the big corner of Chance and Main. That's where you'll see me and everyone else who knows a good trade deal when they can't see one. B-Rock's giant Trade City. Deal so good, even the showroom's a secret.
Good day to you. This is the Thunderbolt for February 6th, 2015. And I am very excited because for the first time this year, I have a whole brand new show for you kids. So here we go. So in the news, Pope Francis recently stated that if someone insulted his mother, then he, Pope Francis, was likely to punch that person in the nose. Now he said this in the context of commenting about the Charlie Hebdo massacre, and he was making a metaphorical equivalence betwixt insulting someone's mother and insulting someone's religion. But that begs the question. Why hasn't someone insulted Pope Francis's mother yet? So that we can witness the spectacle of the infallible one punching someone in the nose. And this makes me wonder, is the Pope a jabber? Or does he prefer a papal roundhouse? I looked into the Catholic Church a long time ago. And I felt as if I had stuck my hand into an overflowing spittoon. The Catholic Church is a major political economic powerhouse, and they pull all the same nasty crap that any other powerful and wealthy powerhouse pulls. But they commit their crimes under the mantle and moral authority of a freaking church, which in my mind makes their nastiness even exponentially worse. The state is what the state is. But a church is supposed to be something quite different. So, I quickly withdrew my hand in disgust. I thoroughly washed it with a highly toxic, heavy-duty, industrial-strength, super-duper badass cleanser. And ever since, I have very studiously kept my hands as far away from the Catholic Church as is humanly possible in this world. When this new pope started doing his populist thing, my comment was that this represented a great leap forward, since it had appeared as if the Catholic Church was finally joining the 19th century. And since I knew that the central job requirement for becoming the Pope is to sell your soul to a large number and to a wide variety of devils, my virginal hands never once strayed anywhere near this new pontifical personage
and I have never taken him seriously. However, since that time, it would seem that rather than spouting pretty rhetoric whilst simultaneously spending prodigious effort not doing anything, Francis instead seems to be making the lifting of the poor the central focus of his papacy. This guy is actually starting to interest me. Did the good guys manage to sneak one in through the back door or something? How's about we follow through on Harry Shearer's idea and stage a papal punch-out cage fight extravaganza with the contestants locked into the transparent bubble of the Pope-mobile? That would not only provide a thoroughly kick-ass venue, but in addition, the pontiff would be unable to take unfair advantage by having God smite his opponent with a lightning bolt or anything.
Guess it was too late for that idea.
One thing that I love about white people is that I can say things about white people that I could not possibly get away with saying about any other race. And speaking of white people, think of those few famous movies wherein the protagonists were non-white people while the bad guys were white people. Think of Dances with Wolves. Think of Django. Or think of a famous movie where the protagonists were 10-foot-tall blue aliens and the bad guys were earthling white people. In every one of these movies, the actual protagonist usually turns out to be a white person who took common cause with the non-white people, or with the blue aliens, as the case may be. Now, Django is something of an exception, but even Django needed a white man to enable him. Now, this would seem to indicate that white people have trouble granting credibility to and or relating to and or bonding with non-white people. In order to understand non-white people, white people seem to need other white people to tell them what is happening, and they can't seem to properly bond with non-white characters. Now, I suspect that this is somewhat true of all races to one extent or another. But I also suspect that that aforementioned extent extends quite a bit further with white people than with any other race. I also suspect that this paradigm is exacerbated by the fact that most white people have no need and no interest in learning about non-white people. On the other hand, the very survival of non-white people often depends upon their knowing everything about white people. And their education about white people is usually greatly helped by the fact that anywhere in the developed world, white culture usually permeates every nook and cranny of everyone's lives and existences. So I rather famously publicly admitted that I am a white man myself recently. I pointed out that I am living proof that some white people can at least somewhat resemble a normal human being. Now, as a white man, I once literally told a U.S. customs agent who was trying to blackmail me that he could take his paperwork and shove it up his ass, and that I had no intention of giving him so much as the time of the day. Then I turned my back on him, and I stood silently for the 2 or 3 minutes that it took for a jail guard to come and let me out of the visiting room into which both the customs agent and I were locked. While I did this knowing full well that doing so was going to cost me several years in prison, Since I was a privileged white person with a lawyer, the mere thought that this cop might beat me up or shoot me for saying and doing what I said and did, frankly, never even crossed my mind. I am not only a privileged white man, but I'm a very smart one and a rather large one who knows how to take care of himself. I have always tended to very aggressively get into life's face. Fear has never played a very much role in my reality. Now, while someone like me can have a thorough academic understanding of oppression and how it works, and I at least like to think that I do, and while I can have a comprehensive education about the effects that oppression has upon the victims, while I can know about all of that, at the same time, it is utterly impossible for someone like me to have even the smallest understanding of what experiencing everyday life and everyday reality is like for an oppressed person. Because I've simply never been there. So I guess that would come under the Rumsfeldian maxim of something that I know that I don't know. But at least I know that I don't know. A lot of white people think that they do know things that they actually don't know at all. So Mr. Rumsfeld's a litany about knowing what we know and not knowing what we don't know never mentioned another category that I just thought of. Things that you know, that are actually completely wrong. Unlike Mr. Rumsfeld, though, I believe it is often the case with white people that they aren't so much evil as just plain ignorant.
All right. That is it for the news and commentary section this week. For the music selection this week, since I'm a white guy talking about black people on this week's show, then this week's music selection features some white guys doing black music. I'm going to feature some songs that you've probably heard before, but I'll be featuring versions of those songs that you've probably never heard before, and I will be featuring a band that you surely have heard of before, but performing in a style and manner that they are not generally noted for. This is Led Zeppelin. Enjoy.
Spend my days with a woman of kind, smoke my stuff and drank all my wine. Made up my mind, make a new start, going to California with an aching in my heart. Someone told me there's a girl out there with love in her eyes, flowers in her hair. Took my chances on a big jet plane. Never let them tell you that we're all the same. The sea was red and the sky was gray. I wondered how tomorrow could ever follow today. Hills and the canyons begin to shake. The children of the sun begin to wake. is sinking. Throw me a line if I'm reaching a top. I'll meet you up there where the paths run straight and high. Find a queen without a king. They say she plays guitar and cries and sings. Ride a white mare in the footsteps of dawn, trying to find a woman who's never, never, never been born. Standing on a hill in the mountain of dreams, telling myself it's not as hard, hard, hard as it seems. It's hard. Don't you even think about it. And yesterday I saw
shiny flowers, but all that lives is born to die. So I said to you that nothing really matters. All you do is stand and cry. Oh, now. I don't know what to say about it when all your ears are turned away. But now's the time to look and look again at what you see. Is that the way it ought to stay? Be, 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 be. That's the way. Ah, uh-huh, that's the way it ought to be. Yeah. My. Said that's the way it ought to stay.
From the 1969 BBC sessions, that was Led Zeppelin performing That's the Way, and before that we had Going to California. There were a lot of bootleg versions of those performances available for a long time, but the official release did not come out until 1997. And yes, Led Zeppelin stole a lot of their music without accreditation. And I don't know why they did that, since they certainly didn't need to do that. Led Zeppelin had more raw talent than probably any other band of that era. And there was a lot of competition for that designation, but whatever. It is what it is, and Led Zeppelin was what Led Zeppelin was. And I'm personally thankful for that. So, that's it for this week's show. I certainly enjoy putting these out for you, and I hope you enjoy listening. We will see you next week. And in the meantime, you should probably keep in mind that the views expressed on the Thunderbolt are those of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station or anyone associated with this radio station. The Thunderbolt website is dana98501.wordpress.com. 98501 is the downtown Olympia zip code, if that helps you remember that. And you can contribute to the Thunderbolt cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. Glad you joined us this week. We hope to see you next week. And in the meanwhile...
Thank you very much.